Welcome to Church Drunk, a spirited conversation about faith, reason, and libations. Woo! Welcome to official Advent. Mm-hmm. Welcome to a new year
Happy New Year, Church calendar.
Here's to that.
Cheers.
And we here at Church Drunk tend to celebrate hard and swear bigly, so be warned.
Yep.
And in addition to that, we are Catholics, and you don't have to be, but you have to be ready to ride the roller coaster of heresy and blasphemy that we sometimes put
you on.
If
you are hanging on by your fingernails, as we are, welcome. Yep. If you are not, maybe just inch away, slowly. Yeah. You've been warned.
So, this is Church Drunk. I am Guess here with my co-host Diz. And
what up?
Diz, what are you drinking?
I am sipping an appropriately named Dark Sarcasm Porter.
Mm.
It is dark. You cannot see through it, but yeah, it has a delightful taste.
Yes.
That might come up later in our discussion of darkness in the church.
We like both of those things, darkness and sarcasm. So yeah. I suppose it fits.
It does. It does. And what about you? What are you sipping?
I'm also on the brewskis for this particular episode, and I have... it's called Der Eagelbrau. It's a Dunkelweiss, and it is from the Brewer's Advent calendar that was so graciously gifted to me by a good friend. Actually, friend of the program.
Haggard.
Shout out to Haggard for hooking us up with a beer advent calendar, a different beer for every day of December leading up to Christmas.
I think that's a wonderfully appropriate New Year celebration to have the beer every day.
Yeah. So today's beer is a lovely... dark Weiss beer. So the Dunkel Eagelbrau.
It's just fun to say
it
Dunkel.
It is fun to say Dunkel Eagelbrau, yeah.
Yeah.
So this is our kicking off a new liturgical year. I feel like this is our third kickoff episode in a row.
Oh my gosh.
We had like our bonus that was kind of a kickoff, and then we had kicking off a new season, and now we have kicking off a new liturgical year.
And we had Milk Drunk kicking off a new baby.
Right. Exactly.
Okay, so
New beginnings,
which appropriately brings us to last year's new beginnings.
Right.
We were kind of thinking back, and we did set New Year's resolutions, and we said today we were going to be, you know, doing, well, this whole Advent,
right,
the examine, and we're heading into the darkness today, and one of your resolutions last year had to do with some dark shit.
Right, yeah. So last year, as we sort of talked about our hopes for the new year,
mm-hmm,
you know, as
mm-hmm,
we kind of were like, it's Catholic New Year, let's set some resolutions. Mm-hmm. The goal that I had, we did one for ourselves and one for the church, and my church New Year's resolution was like, dear church, please stop buggering the altar boys.
Right.
And that,
fervent
I feel like maybe I cursed us in some way, shape, or form.
Okay. You cannot be held responsible for the late buggering of boys in 2018.
If you listen to some of what the bishops have to say, we are all collectively responsible for this evil.
Dude, where's my drink? Let me just hold it while you... Go ahead, keep talking. I'm fine.
So it was, dear church, New Year's resolution, stop buggering the altar boys. And mm-hmm, then we have had this absolute clusterfuck of just badness for this entire year of, you know, one news story after another of new allegations surfacing or a record of allegations that was somehow held secret for a long time where they released the names of hundreds of victims or hundreds of perpetrators or... just on and on and on.
The fact that we're having the conversation at every single diocese, right, should and is, I would imagine, having the conversation of when do we release our list? Because everybody's got a list.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And they're not recent lists. Like, let's be fair.
Right.
It's, you know, your resolution failed for sure,
right,
but not all the buggering was done in 2018.
Right. But at the same time, like, I don't understand. And this is one of the big things that I personally grapple with is, like, if, you know, the big story was 2002 when the Boston Globe broke the news, but there were definitely, like, lots of issues before that
for
even.
Sure.
Like, there were definitely, you know, lawsuits and allegations and all sorts of things going on even before 2002. But so we're coming up on, like, 20 plus years, not where it's been happening, but where it's been public knowledge that it's happening.
Yeah.
And we're still trying to figure out how to make it right. And there are still people who are keeping secrets about it. Like people
who
are
haven't got the message.
Full transparency is not the way to go.
How we handle this.
Yeah. Like it's crazy.
Well, and this is an example, unfortunately, of the church mirroring regular society, right? This is the year of the Me Too movement of all kinds of people being called out, and rightfully so, for their heinous fuckery, most foul.
Yes.
Hashtag Chris Moore. because, and the church is supposed to be a counterpoint to culture, right? Like, ideally, the church would be like a place where whatever's bad in the culture is not bad there, where we'd be a counterpoint and something to look to. But instead, we're a mirror image.
Yeah.
And an older one, in fact. So I don't know how to fix it, except, like you said, the transparency, but at least to acknowledge that this is a societal problem and for sure even worse, a church problem. Like, we have, like, the double indemnity. Yeah. We're supposed to not have the same problems.
Yeah. Well, and it's been interesting that over the course of the last year, since making the resolution, as we dive sort of deeper and deeper into this, like, this is something that we talked about, you know, like, being part of our Advent process, you know,
right.
Like, we sort of have been living in blissful ignorance, just from a podcasting perspective,
right? The short time we're seeing here.
You know, there was some really crazy stuff going on in the headlines that we were just kind of, you know, like, we tend to be like, hey, let's bang the drum of bitching and moaning about everything that's awful in the world.
Sure.
But instead, we're hiding it, from it, maybe.
We've acknowledged, we will own, we took an escapist summer off and a lot of shit happened before, during, and after that time.
But Advent is our time to connect with the darkness. So, and we're doing our Advent examine. So this is our time to say, what are the things that are going wrong?
So, in your examine, after you finish being grateful and inviting God in, whatever order you do that, then you're supposed to look back and say, where have I fallen down? Where have I sinned? In this case, Mother Church, it's not hard to find where we've fucked up. We have... cardinals and bishops and laity in the chanceries. I don't hold you innocent either. Everybody moving these guys around.
People who look the other way.
People who look the other way, right? So there's this complicity. Mm-hmm. And if we want to talk about social sin and structural sin, it's really being pointed out to us where it hurts the most with our innocence, with our children, and with the faith and the trust that's being lost.
Well, and one of the things that I have certainly struggled with myself over the years, right? And we have seen very good friends, people who are, and they're still good friends. It's not like we lose them as a friend, but people who, you know, drop away from the church with valid reason. It's hard to stay in church, you know, and work for the church and do things that are kind of churchy things when you know that the organization that you're working for is corrupt. Like, there's no other way to say it than, like, it claims to help people, and it does help people. I think it's important to keep some perspective, but that the perspective, right, the focus right now, the spotlight should not be on, like, the good that the church does. The spotlight needs to be on the people whose lives have been destroyed, the people who have been damaged, and how do we make it better? How do we keep that from happening? And for some reason, and we kind of talked about this, like, we're still on that sinking ship. We're still trying to fight that fight. And we're trying to, you know, do something positive from within. But for many years, people would be like, they would ask in honesty, you know, how can you still be representing an organization where that is what happens there?
And I mean, from a personal standpoint, it's something that's still constantly being addressed. Like, if I go somewhere and I have to meet a bunch of new people who perhaps don't really know that I'm truly a star Catholic with my dark sarcasm here, then just see me in a certain other way, they might say, they might give me the same untrustworthiness that the public version of the church is getting. And I have found myself saying, hey, just like, I want to be upfront and say what I think and what I believe, so they don't think I'm that party line tower.
Right.
And that's a sad thing.
Yeah.
But I do think that, like you said, the church has to say we were wrong.
Yeah.
And we should be in the apologizing phase of making things right. Like, we need a penitential part from the leadership.
Yeah.
And they, you know, we have a hierarchical church. We have a patriarchal church.
Yeah.
So it's on them to own it and to apologize. And I think that happens in small ways. That is happening in small ways. But it really does need to be on a grand scale for us to have any legitimacy in the current world.
Yeah. And there's things going on in the larger world, you know, beyond, because you can put on some church blinders sometimes. And and some people put on church blinders that say, maybe that's our next podcast, church blinders. Welcome to church blinders. But, like, you know, people will put on their blinders and say, well, look at, you know, everything that the church has done for me, or look at what the church does for good, and the church can only be good. And there's other people who put on church blinders and say, well, look at all the bad that the church is doing, and it can only be that. But what we've done in the last year plus with the whole like Me Too movement is we've taken off those blinders and we've realized something that, that some people in the church have said for a while, which is like, it's not just the church, right? It's not just priests and bishops that are committing these atrocities. It's coaches and it's your average CEO of a corporation or even just worker at a corporation. Yeah. It's anybody who has a position of influence over somebody else and uses that for some sort of nefarious deeds. And so we're starting to pull back the curtain on that construct of power and see that it does happen across the board. And
So I think,
how do you change that?
I don't know, because I think it's revealing that we have a cultural problem with sex and with sex abuse, and we inherited some of that from our Puritans, but we can't really blame them for the pedophilia.
Right.
I don't think, maybe, I don't know, but I think there's like this parallel revealing of our racist racism problem, right? Mm-hmm. Like we're seeing this era of everything's being unveiled and we have to look at the ugliness.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons why I don't think the solution is leaving is because there's nowhere to
there's
go.
There's nowhere to go.
It's everywhere.
Yeah.
So you
can say, I can no longer, you know, and for some people, you know, because spirituality is such a personal thing, they would say, I can't be part of an organization that has this ugly side to it.
Right.
That's not my pathway to God. And I can understand that and respect that perspective. But at the same time, when every week is a new headline of something awful happening somewhere, like it was almost like an oversimplification of the whole world when I was like, dear church, please stop buggering the altar boys, then everything will get better. And now it's like, nope, we need to have everybody just take a pause from like the power brokering of the buggery.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing is like, what is the most important? If the most important thing to you is being defensive or covering your tail, I don't think that's holy.
Yeah.
I don't think that's honest. I don't think that's productive. And I don't think it has, and I'm not just talking church. I'm talking everything.
Yeah.
You know, when we have these huge problems, we have to own it and we have to, you know, spend some time in that hurt.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of where we are, right? We're in this era, we're in this time when people are speaking up and telling their stories. And it's ugly and painful. And some people react by saying, well, then I'm out of this organization. I'm going to go to the funny church and sing Jesus praise songs.
Right.
But I'm sorry, that youth minister in there is probably, you know, doing something they ought not to be doing either.
Right.
Like there is no escape.
And do you really want that? Do you want a mass exodus? You know, like from
I think we're seeing it, though.
From our perspective, we kind of lamented that for a while of like watching good people leave the church.
Right.
Because if the good people leave, all you're left with are the crazies, right? And I think that, you know, like the same thing can be said of like politics right now, right? Like we're seeing how ugly politics can be. And you say, well, if like good people don't get involved with that ugliness, then it will never get better, you know?
Yeah.
And so you have to have people that are willing to enter into that mess and say, okay, let's figure out what we can do to make it more transparent, to make it more honest, to make it more based
right.
on the actual merits of the people whose lives are affected by this, you know? And hopefully we start to see that in the church. Hopefully we start to see that in other arenas.
And because, you know, we are a structural church, right? Like they asked for it to be this way. Like they have made this the way it is where, you know, there's people in charge officially and all that.
Oh, we know. There's nothing that the church hierarchy loves more than the church hierarchy.
Right. So I think it really is on them to hand it to the laity.
Yeah.
I am calling officially, you know, for the higher ups. And I have friends who are priests who 100% agree with this.
They ask
who are also, you know, feel like we do.
Yeah.
And hate to be associated with it. Like this is a burden for everybody in the church.
It's a hard time.
This hurts everybody.
It's a really hard time to be a priest. And I know like nobody out there is gonna cry too many tears for like the priests that did, you know, like their sort of culture of seclusion has created all of these issues. And many of them are still sort of pampered, you know, you live in the rectory and somebody comes and cooks for you and does your laundry and does all this stuff. Like, it's like, you know, it's a different lifestyle.
And we're asking them to give up other things as kind of the trade for that. Right. But you know, behaving yourself is a requirement.
Keep your hands
but
to yourself.
I know, but I'm saying though that I know good guys who are priests who also say exactly what I'm saying right now, which is in regards to transparency and abuse and allegations. It is high past time for that to be handed over to the lady. And there is no canon law reason why that should not be so.
Right.
And I think that is the only way
for them to come
clean and to show any good faith.
Yes.
Restoration.
We've talked before about the fact that we hold Frankie in high esteem in that one of the first things that he did was turn over the Vatican finances to sort of a third party independent sort of arbitrator to say,
clean this up.
Here's where we're at. We can no longer run our own books. We've shown ourselves to be not responsible enough to handle that. And the same thing is true now of the personal lives of some of these priests, bishops, cardinals who...
Right. Their assignments, you're not trustworthy enough to handle that.
Yeah.
Like,
and if seminaries have become like sort of these little enclaves where there's its own set of rules and its own set of lifestyles and there's secrets that are kept and there's things that happen that people don't, you're not allowed to talk about. Like, we would never let a regular university get away with that type of culture. And so we cannot let our church institutions get away with that. We can't let, again, any of these institutions where that Me Too movement is really starting to reveal the ugliness, they just can't be left to their own devices. You know, like it's not, and that's, it's an unfortunate reality right now.
So we'll be watching very closely what comes out of the worldwide meeting in February regarding this. You know, I like Pope Francis. I like him a lot, especially compared to other choices. But I don't have faith. I still want to see it to believe it. And I'm hoping that they do the right thing and that there is a very firm and strong and clear guidance to the whole world about how to handle this. I don't know that will happen, though.
I don't know that it will either. Like, I think this is why Advent is important.
It is the week of hope, y'all.
It is. Because every year, you know, like, and, you know, I'm sure that it's a bit of navel-gazing to be like, it feels like every year it just gets worse and worse, you know?
There's just so much darkness. But are the days shorter?
If you do enough looking, it's... are the days shorter? If you do enough looking, it's not that hard to find things that are wrong with our world, with our culture, whether you're talking about the church or whether you're talking about the rest of the mess. And Advent is our time to say... yeah, like this is wrong, and you can't get better without saying that first step of saying these things suck. And Advent connects us with that period of darkness where the whole world was waiting for something, someone to make it better, you know. And whether you take that literally or you take it as part of the figurative story of salvation history, you know, like that period of darkness, that's where we're at. But there's the hope that maybe it gets better. Yeah. Is it a strong hope for me right now that, like, in February there's going to be a meeting of the minds in the church internationally to say, here's how we're going to fix it and we're going to hold ourselves accountable and it's going to get better? No, it's not a strong hope that it's going to happen in my lifetime because this is the slowest changing institution in the world that we're talking about.
So those are all true things. And just to kind of circle back to, like, we're in this stage of the exam, and that's why it's one of the stages, because there's always something bad.
Yeah.
There's always some darkness in your life, and we all go through periods where it seems overwhelming, or you have to maybe look a little bit harder to be honest about it, and maybe there is a certain gift in that we have not a splinter, but a, like, forest in our face that we need to deal with, which is this problem. So... at least it is being called out. Yeah. At least it is open. Everybody's talking about it and is concerned about it, whether you are a traditionalist, whether you are a liberation theology nut. Every single group.
It reaches across
nobody
all
thinks
boundaries
this is okay.
Of like the full theological spectrum.
And so there is a little kernel of hope in that.
Yeah.
Maybe we want to end just this little bit on the number one question, maybe even the church drunkiest question of all, which is like, why have we persevered? Why have we stayed? Why are you staying even this year of Me Too?
Well, I think, you know, as we talk about it and we say, you know, like, if we parallel it with Advent and we remind ourselves of what Advent is, then you have to remind yourself of who the Messiah is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And like, if you really do put yourself, if when you dig into that and you understand where the story of the Israelites, the full arc of it, and how they had been you know, exiled and enslaved and all of these things, where as a people, they were holding on to this promise from God that, like, there will be a Messiah that comes and sets things right. And as Christians, we believe that Jesus was that Messiah. Christmas time is about honoring the arrival of that Messiah. There is nothing, and I literally mean there is nothing less probable than the actual arrival of the Messiah.
The
Yeah, little baby Jesus in the manger, right? And Mary and Joseph riding on a donkey and all that shit that may not be true, right? Yeah. But like all of that, there is nothing less probable. And you look at the impact that it's had on the world. Yeah. And so for me to lose hope, to say, I don't think that there's a possibility of it getting better, would mean that I would actually have to go and seek out another spiritual pathway, because I've lost hope in what the Messiah represents spiritually, what it represents personally, what it represents symbolically, like all of those things. If you don't think that there's a possibility that it gets better, you're in real trouble, like, you know, on a variety of levels. So for me, the reason that I stay is because when I ask myself that question, like, do I actually believe in the hope of the Messiah and the resurrection and that whole nine yards? I still say yes. Mm-hmm. And that means that right now it can't be that bad.
Okay. I'm terrified, but good.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
So what about you? Why do you stay?
Yeah. You know, not for maybe that exact, like, I hadn't thought about the salvation portion as much. For me, it's such a personal thing. It comes back to that, like, that Brian Doyle essay we love, that this is my language and this is my home, and I can show up for Mass very disillusioned, very grumpy, very much considering other places to be, and still, that is my home. And because it's my home, it's and the reason I feel it's home is that it's true.
Yeah.
So there's this thing where I can't quite shake it. You know, you said I'd have to go find another spirituality, because I've had these experiences in my life that tell me that spirituality is real.
Yeah.
That I have a conviction as to that. And then I'm like, well, where else would I go? This is the thing that makes sense to me. And so there's a mystery to ponder, is that the thing that makes sense to me is in a horrible mess, is very broken, and that is the beauty of life as well. And so I think because it's true, because it's my home, because it is our broken beauty, I think that's why I'm here. And it's awful, but I love fucking Advent, right? Like, I'm sitting in the darkness.
It's Advent, man.
Yeah.
Well, and to put it in the context of the exam, and, you know, like, when I work with the exam,
I can't deny it. That's
people,
the problem.
Like, as I kind of coach people through it from time to time, the part where you say, okay, so, you know, you think back over the course of your day, and what are the highlights and what are the lowlights? And when you hit those lowlights and you say, what is that thing that maybe you could have done better? I always kind of highlight the fact that, like, in acknowledging it, you have to be able to give yourself permission to move on, right?
Right.
Like, claim it, own it, say, I could have done better. And in that, there is a sense of liberation.
Right.
Allow yourself to move forward.
And that's what we're asking the church to do.
That's what we're
asking. And this apology and this transparency is to really own it.
Own it and give us all a chance to kind of move into the next chapter.
Because
right?
I don't think we can leave each other in the global churchy sense.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I talk to people who consider themselves former Catholics, or they're not as involved and they've gone away from the church. And a lot of them express a missing of that piece.
Yeah.
So I think we are all still in it together.
And we've lived the majority of our lives in a church that has been scandalized. And, like,
true.
I would really love to be able to experience a different chapter of the church. You know?
Well, cheers to that.
Yeah.
Happy New Year, church.
Happy
Good
New
luck.
Year. So one of the other things that we did was last year at the beginning of the year, we set our New Year's resolutions for ourselves, not just for the church. So mine sort of was a bit of a jinxy New Year's resolution for the church.
It's not your fault, guess.
I know, but
it's not your fault.
So what do we want to do for ourselves in the liturgical year to come?
Yes. Yeah, so we were going to set some of our spiritual New Year's resolutions, Trigy Advent New Year. So last year I said that I wanted to read more books of substance.
Yes.
And I did a few. Mm-hmm. I don't think I did as many as I maybe should have or could have.
Yeah.
And even as you were talking, it made me think of the Nouwen book, the desert one that I read.
Yeah.
In the name of it right now. Yeah, but that was one that was really great. So that was a good goal. But I think for this new year, I do need to kind of go into a more prayerful sense, not just the, you know, I'm comfortable in the book reading domain.
Right.
So I think for myself in this new year, it will be a goal of a little bit more of the sacramentality. So a little bit more devotional prayer, like kind of, I was thinking just the other day, I was thinking about upcoming Immaculate Conception.
Yeah.
And I haven't said the rosary in a really long time. And you're better at this than me. Like, you pick this up for the seasons, and sometimes. I haven't. So I'm actually going back to a basic, very Catholic-y thing to do.
Lovely.
And going to pick up the rosary as a regular, maybe a daily.
Very nice.
At least a couple times a week. I got to make that a habit.
Yeah. Great way to put yourself to sleep. Yep. Pray the rosary.
the lovely little myth is that your angel finishes it for
there
you if you,
you
don't.
Go.
I know you don't believe in them, which is why your rosary is going.
It's why mine are all undone.
Okay, what about you? What are you going
to
do?
Yeah, so last year my resolution was read more theology, like genuine theology. And I think we said that we both wanted to read a little bit more of Pope Francis and things like that. But it was kind of funny.
How'd you do with that?
We both picked books.
Yeah, well,
you know,
hilarious.
We read a little bit of Francis, but I never really sat down and like settled in with some Pope Francis. But I am currently reading The Divine Milieu from Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, which I love. And I'd always wanted to read some more de Chardin never actually, like I'd read quotes and snippets and bits and pieces, but this is my first time. So I realized the other day, I was like, oh shit, I said I was going to read some theology. So
getting under the gun here.
Yeah, so
that's
I'm
good.
Trying to do
that's
that.
Good.
But for the coming year, coming church year, I am going to go with a gift that you actually gave to me.
Oh, nice.
The Secrets of Jesuit Bread Making.
A book, everyone.
Brother Rick Curry, S.J. So it is still book centric.
R.I.P.
Oh, all right. I did not know.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I got you that like the year he died, which is what brought it to my attention.
Brother Rick Curry.
Sorry,
rest
Brother
in
Rick
peace.
Yeah, cheers to him.
So you gave me this, and I've made a few recipes out of it.
All
and
delicious.
What I love about it is that it's mainly bread recipes that he's picked up from different Jesuit like residences around the world. But he does include some reflections and some prayers and things like that. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to go full, and it's organized by a liturgical season. So
as
it starts
it
with Advent and moves through the liturgical year.
Cool. Okay.
So I'm going to go full on like Julie and Julia with Brother Rick Curry this year. I'm going to make all of his Advent bread recipes in Advent, and I'm going to move through the liturgical year with him, and I'm going to try and pray the reflections that are in here, and by the end of the year, hopefully have like my favorites earmarked and stuff like that. So.
Mrs. Guess and I and our friends are going to eat so much bread.
So much bread.
It's pretty exciting.
It's a year of bread!
Year of bread!
Yeah. So that's my goal, is I want to get through the whole book of the secret. You know, it's probably about 10 to 20 recipes per liturgical season. So
That's an ambitious goal.
I'm gonna get bakey.
He's gonna get real bakey. The world is falling apart. Hashtag me too. And guests will be
every
bacon.
Weekend. I'm just gonna wake and bake. And just
you were waiting to pull that one out. Okay. Well, you can tell us what your church New Year spiritual goal is by emailing us at churchdrunk@gmail.com or tweeting at guests@churchdrunkpod.
Yeah, hit me up.
Maybe we should write down our resolutions on the bloggy, which is at churchdrunk.com.
Yep.
And we'd love to hear from you. And next time, we will be moving out of darkness. Into the week of peace and talking about good stuff.
Yeah, a little bit more of the kind of reflectiveness of like, what are the highlights, where you see the spirit moving in your life, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
So we hope you join us next week. And we thank you for joining us this week here on Church Drunk, where it doesn't necessarily have to be Catholic New Year's for the balls to drop.
Get those out of my face.
Cheers.
Peace.